So I've been trying to make clear to myself, and I hope to you, what Christmas is really all about, namely the anticipation of God sending Jesus back to do justice on the earth. And therefore, this gives a kind of provisional, not a kind of, but a definitely provisional character to everything in our lives. We are essentially unfinished. Last week I talked about the church as being provisional. I mean, this is so alien to our consciousnesses, but there you have it. After, in the kingdom, there will be no church. There will simply be the human family, full stop. Today's reading raises, I even think, more serious problem than trying to get our heads around the notion that the church is provisional, that it needs reform constantly, and it is what it is now is not what it's called to be. Scholars have pointed out that when you get this list of things that Jesus tells John the Baptist's disciples to look for, remember, the blind receive their sight, the lame walk, lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the poor have the gospel brought to them. They point out that those are listed in ascending order of importance. That is to say, if the poor really do hear the good news, that's even more remarkable than the dead being raised. In all of those instances, what's going on? It is all these people who are so extrinsic to our consciousness, the blind, the lame, the lepers, the dead, are really called to be one with us and we with them, and above all, the poor. I've been fretting over this for weeks, and I confess, what may come out of my mouth today may sound somewhat disheveled and something of a miscellany, but I wanted to make some suggestions. How do we get our heads around the poor being our sisters and brothers? Not objects of our pity, and that's an important distinction to make right at the outset. They're not our objects of our pity. Or if they are, that's not the Christian view of things, but our sisters and brothers. But again, to the difficulty. Every year, when I remember in class, I do a little experiment with my classes. I ask everybody in the room to shut their eyes. I said, I'm going to write a word on the board. And when it's finished, I want you to open your eyes and acknowledge or recognize the very first thing that comes into your mind. The word is S-U-C-C-E-S-S. It's a very telling exercise, I think. Because I think in 99 or 100% of the cases, its success is measured by how much wealth we can acquire, or what status enabled by wealth we can have in the world. If that is, as I'm convinced it is for me, and I think for the people in my classes, the measure of what it is to be a successful human being, then that argues to the profound difficulty of getting our heads around the poor as our sisters and brothers. They're alien to our experience. One of the most helpful things I ever did in my life was when I was in the States working in a parish in the middle of Illinois. I was privileged to be deeply involved in Lyndon Johnson's ill-fated War on Poverty. I mean, those of you, if anyone in this room is old enough to even remember that. Johnson said, we're going to eliminate poverty in our country. It was ill-fated, of course, because he was also carrying on a war in Vietnam, and so the great equation became either guns or butter. You could not have both. And not surprisingly, guns won out. And then he was followed, of course, by Richard Nixon, who merrily disbanded the entire war on poverty, except for some things with early childhood education. But when I was working with them, I did a number of things, and two things I just want to mention that were enormously helpful to me, and I hope they will be helpful to you. A lady came into our office, headquarters of the Community Action Program, the War on Poverty, and she had to go to the bureaucracy, the local bureaucracy, about a question of her welfare checks. Okay, so I said, I'll go with you. We went into this very large room filled with all kinds of people and a very long bar, all the bureaucrats on that side, all the clients on this side. When we finally got to one of the agents and explained our case, we were at one end of the room, somebody else at the other end of the room, and the one that we were talking to spoke loudly enough to be heard by the person at the other end of the room, this woman's whole history. Simply exposed her dire states and why she was there. It was a very illuminating moment for me. Because I thought, my God, these people don't really exist. These people truly do not exist as human beings for these people, for these bureaucrats. They are invisible. They are non-entities. And so this raises a whole question, very interesting one, of the psychology of the poor. But also it raises questions for me, what is my understanding of the psychology of the poor? The other instance was this. I had to give talks all over the county about the war on poverty, and I vividly remember speaking to a church group. And in the course of what I was trying to say, I said, you know, the poor are not poor because they deserve to be poor, because they're immoral or lazy. There's a woman in the room who quivered with outrage, literally, quivered with outrage at that suggestion. These were good Christian women. And again, I thought to myself, my God in heaven, where are we? What are we? It's no accident that 95% of every parish budget is spent on hymnals, cleaning, repainting. In other words, it is always turned in. For most parishes, very little of it goes outside. And that's one of the reasons why I suggested you look at that passage in the Richard Sipe collection where it shows that in order to fully equip an archbishop to be able to celebrate Mass, he had to buy $40,000 worth of clothes just to appear on the altar. What are we doing? What do we symbolize to the world, we as an institution? So how? How do we enlarge our imaginations? How do we come to imagine that the kingdom of God means that each of us is going to be able to look at everybody else's face and see in that face a sister or a brother? So many obstacles to that, not least of which is what I have called the aesthetics of poverty. Poor people smell bad. They do. Poor people look bad. Their hair is unkempt. Many teeth are missing. The complexions are sallow, or sunken, or pockmarked. I'm not trying to induce in you or myself a sense of guilt, but rather to enlarge our imaginations, to really be able to celebrate Christmas. The birth of this poor man, Jesus. It's, of course, the Gospel of Luke who makes that most clear. Jesus was born homeless. Jesus' announcement was made, birth announcement was made to the dregs of the society, namely shepherds, who couldn't get a job doing anything else because they're considered outcasts. So, this is a real existential problem for me. How do I retain that awareness of two-thirds of the world's population? I think it is a real problem. Yesterday, another unhappy incident came. One of my sons has lost all of his jobs, I think because of racist employers. His wife has been hounding him because he does not have enough money to buy Christmas gifts for his kids, and he doesn't. What kind of Christmas gifts, I said, are they looking for? Video games. I said, they're really expensive, aren't they? He says, yes, they are. But what throws me, and I bring this up as another instance, of our failure to understand where we are in the world. I did give him a lot of money. I hope to God he doesn't buy video games, frankly. To prolong the illusion for these little kids that we're entitled to video games. So what do we do? What do we do to humanize the face of the poor? To at least create in our imagination the possibility that they really do belong to us, with us. A couple of suggestions. I mean, there are all kinds of agencies, Salvation Army, Men's Mission here in town, and I know some of you have volunteered there to come cheek by jowl with the poor. Is an extraordinarily important situation. In the social justice program, kids go to third world country. And this provides an experience that usually shatters them. But not always. Just to show you again how difficult this is, I remember when I was teaching at Quincy College, a group of kids went down to Haiti for the spring break. I went to an AIDS hospice in New Orleans. These are, a bunch of the kids went to Haiti. And so they came back and were going to give a talk on their experience in Haiti. This was their reading of their experience in Haiti. A girl came up and stood at the podium and said, "Oh, yeah, we went to an orphanage. And those little black babies are so cute. Those little black babies are so cute. We played with them." Then, of course, we went to the beach and talked about how cute those little black babies were. I thought to myself, my God, how impenetrable are we? So again, back to a suggestion. I presume everybody's heard of Dorothy Day. There was a talk by Robert Ellsberg, the son of that great man who released the Pentagon Papers. He was at King's a couple weeks ago, about Dorothy Day. He's the editor at Orbis Books, and he's edited a volume of her letters. Dorothy Day was a journalist, basically. She's written several books, but she's dead now. She died in 68. Constantly at war with the Cardinal Archbishop of New York, Francis Spellman. A big super militarist. She called herself a Christian anarchist, a Catholic anarchist. I would really recommend that you go on Amazon.ca and just type in Dorothy Day, and see The Long Loneliness, Bread and Fishes, the volume of her letter. This woman lived inside that experience for decades until she died. She does not romanticize the poor, but they clearly emerge from her writings as co-human beings with her. I think that's very useful. And then simply to walk around, as I try to, in the back of my head with this figure of a black, poor, female, homosexual, handicapped human being, and to keep her as company with me. And finally, and this is a suggestion I've made before, and I find it kind of useful for myself, when I budget my income, how much room do I have, do I make for the poor, whom I can't see, whom I'm not with, but who in time, when Christmas is fulfilled in the kingdom, I will recognize as my sisters and brothers. It's a first step, a modest step, but I think a useful one in what is for us, I think, a very difficult journey.